Ice spread a song so you can sing along with my special guest or two.
Or two.
You like to sing and dance, and this podcast by chance explores musicals for you. Theme song, yeah.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Life's But a Song, a podcast that likes to live in the land of musicals. I'm your host, John, and with me today is a very special guest who I can't remember how this came about, but we're doing it. It's Mark Benanti, everyone.
Hey, thank you for having me back. Always happy to be here.
I can't remember.
I don't know how this, I assume I brought it up. I always bring up Top Banana, so I definitely didn't come from anywhere else, but this crazy brain.
I have two options. One is Lil Abner, but I always blame everything on that episode, so who knows? Yeah. And the other one is Kiss Me Kate, because I think you were talking about how this was filmed in 3D and everything,
yeah,
and how Kiss Me Kate was also filmed in 3D.
Yep.
Well, we're here today to talk about the 1954 movie version of Top Banana.
I said I was doing a podcast today. She goes, oh, is it with the guy who hates everything?
Okay.
No, he just hates my picks.
Not all your picks.
What was the last one that you liked? You liked one of them.
What was the last one besides Across the Universe?
Cats Don't Dance?
I think I was mid about Cats Don't Dance.
I thought there was something you really liked. I don't know.
Oh, definitely Tenacious D and definitely Cradle of Rock.
Oh, yeah, Tenacious D and Cradle of Rock. That's right. Yeah, Tenacious D, but yes, and Cradle of Rock. Yes.
And Cradle
Man,
of Rock.
We've done so many good episodes together.
We've got a mixed bag here.
We do. I'm an eclectic soul.
So, Top Banana, the screenplay is by Gene Towne. Music and lyrics by Johnny Mercer. It was directed by Alfred E. Green and Albert Zugsmith. We're going with it. And according to IMDb, a filmed version of Phil Silver's hit Broadway show about a television comic who tried to regain his ratings on TV. Okay.
Wait, so who did you say wrote the book? I mean, the script?
Screenplay by Gene Towne. That's what IMDb told me. I think it. He
oh,
wrote,
you're right, but it's. But I see. He must have adapted the book. Of the musical.
Yes. Let's see. The book is written.
Highcraft wrote the book.
Highcraft and Johnny Mercer apparently are credited.
Yes.
According to IMDb, it could be wrong. I guess Johnny Mercer because they're like lyrics, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you know.
So, I didn't hate this. I want to say that right off the bat.
Before we start, I was watching this going, how is he going to find this movie? Is it even available? How did you find it?
It's on Prime.
It's on Prime. See, I have my own copy.
Yes, but so your copy, is it the choppy version as well?
Yeah, only the choppy version exists.
Okay, that's what I hated about this movie. That
yeah, it's sort of considered semi-lost media. Because the cuts are super wonky and they're lost.
Because at first it's like, whoa, okay. I thought it was because the concept for this is that they did the show and then somebody was like, hey, let's turn the show into a movie. However, we're not filming it at a real theater. We're gonna build a set to look like a stage, and we're gonna go there. And I was like, cool, that's a great concept. I feel like this is potentially the first pro shot ever.
That's basically what this feels like, is the very first sort of early pro shot, which is fascinating to me.
But I wanted them to go more into you're watching the play. You know, like, show us the gross side of things, like the curtain closing. Apparently, you could see a stagehand and one scene in the background, and I was like, give me more of that, because that's the that was the idea. They wanted the audience, the film going audience, to feel like they're seeing the play, the musical, the stage
just
version.
In 3D, that was the whole concept
just
behind
it
being in 3D.
I also didn't like the character of Jerry. The fact that he kept snapping got to me. I was
He's supposed to be a jerk. He's supposed to be a jerk.
Yes, like that I picked up on. So I was like, great, I'm feeling the thing I'm supposed to feel. It's just, I feel like things were taken out and we're missing a lot. Like, not just the film, like the actual footage, but like story-wise, we're missing some things.
Yeah, it definitely, I'm sure, was, I haven't compared it to the original script, if I can even find the original script, but I'm sure it was sanitized a bit for film in the 50s, I'm sure.
Right.
That it got a little blue on stage.
Because it's an hour and 40 minutes before the cuts. I believe that's what I'm reading. Yes, before the cuts. And then after the cuts, it's like an hour and 20. And so, and it's all random shit that they cut out.
Random, like, and all of Rosemarie, who plays Betty's songs, were cut.
Yes, because
all of them.
Because she didn't want to sleep with a producer.
Yep. Yep.
Welcome to the casting couch, everyone.
Yikes.
Oh my God. Yikes. But yeah, I mean, so I have a little confusion because I don't know if it was because of the cuts or because, you know, my attention was diverted elsewhere. So we have Phil Silvers playing Jerry Biffle.
Biffle, yeah.
Is he supposed to be like Johnny Carson or?
He is supposed to be Milton Berle.
Milton Berle, okay.
Yeah, and sort of a precursor to people like Sid Caesar. So basically, comedians who would sort of have their own TV show and do skits and...
Like a variety show of sorts.
Yeah, and then, sort of.
And because this is the 50s, they would have commercials built into the program.
Yeah, I mean, even sitcoms back then, the commercials were built in. Like, one of my favorite shows growing up was the George Burns and Gracie Allen show. And, like, the neighbor would come over and talk about, you know, carnation evaporated milk for a minute, you know. And so, like, they were always built into the structure of, they didn't, like, pause for commercials.
Okay. So then, who's Pinky? What is his job? What does he do?
He's the second banana. That's his job. That's Pinky is, yeah, with that laugh.
Pinky. Yeah. And he overly laughs. I'm like, this guy isn't that funny. Yeah. I get it. But again, I was like, Pinky, are you the assistant? Are you just like the friend?
Yeah, he's just the lackey. He's just the second banana. He's there for the punchlines. That's what he is.
Because he's part of the trio of, there's Pinky, there's the writer, and then there's the barber.
Did you recognize the writer, Vic?
He looked so familiar, and I didn't recognize him.
That's Grandpa Joe from Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
Shut up. Shut. I mean, yep. I also recognize Rosemarie with that. And then I'm like, you look and sound so familiar, Dick Van Dyke Show.
Yep.
Yep. Okay.
And Dick Van Dyke got his television, made his television debut on the Phil Silver Show, which Phil Silvers did right after this, which Sergeant Bilko, that whole show is one of my favorites growing up. So.
Oh my goodness. So did this, I mean, I don't think this helped him get that because from
this
what
absolutely, well, not this movie.
Not the movie, I'm saying, yeah.
But the stage show, Top Banana, really propelled him to superstardom. He won the Tony for it.
Yes.
In 1951 or two.
Two.
Two. And then, that sort of led him to get the Phil Silver show.
So, okay. I have a real quick question about the Tony Awards.
Yes.
The history of them. So I'm looking at the Wikipedia page where, you know, you see all who won. And what's fascinating is that not until 1956 do they have options. So was it just that everyone was open? This is a history lesson for me and for the listeners, because it just says Phil Silvers won. There was no like.
Yeah, they didn't announce any sort of nominees. I don't know if they had a short list or they just. Yeah,
they just I'm sorry, you cut off for a second. They just what?
They just announced the winner. There was no nominees.
Interesting.
Yeah,
I figured you would have the answer because you're Mr. Broadway by Ghostlight. So unfortunately, I also gave you the wrong songs because two different sources are telling me two different things. I was like, oh, so this is the stage show. So basically they should be doing all of the songs minus, of course, the Rosemary ones because she wouldn't sleep with the producer. But yeah. Then there's one on IMDb that's like, oh, here are these other songs entirely. So I don't know.
That's so funny.
It's wild, but there's really only 9 songs in this whole thing, I think.
Yeah.
The whole...
And it's all sort of random. It's very... This is definitely a holdover from pre-Oklahoma musicals. This was sort of the fully integrated, you know, this is sort of the last breaths of that world of just loosely tied together vignettes to get from one joke to one song to the next joke.
And you can tell, or at least I assumed that some of these were supposed to be because they were doing a scene change or a costume change, like the elevator song. I wrote down, who has a costume change? Because it's so random.
Yeah, well, I mean, not even that. It's just, I mean, I'm sure there was costume change, but it was just, that was sort of the vibe. It was just sort of the plot wasn't important. The feelings, the jokes, the laughs were important.
So I feel like also there's a lot of bits happening in this that I think worked better in person than maybe on
with
film.
A live audience. This would have, like, with an
killed.
Actual laugh, even a laugh track, I think would have helped the film in places.
Yes. Well, because then there's
an old. Sorry, okay, go ahead.
You go. I was about to jump here.
I was going to say, an old burlesque sort of trope is that throughout an evening, there's sort of like running gags that are in every, like, if you notice, like, it kept slipping on one part of the stage and like.
Okay, yes.
Like,
yes.
Different acts, like, it would happen in random places and like, it wasn't like, oh, in this scene, this is the gag. It's sort of like a running bit throughout the whole show that there's one slippery part of the stage, you know. You can see a lot of that in old, like, I Love Lucy episodes, like, where Fred is bringing on a little while later, it'll be a bigger tree. And it's like running gags were a big thing. So that's where some of the randomness comes in a little bit.
And I feel like some of the bits work better in person, like that one random guy who keeps holding their hands when they're towards the end.
That's the funniest goddamn thing to me. I laugh. See, now, this is my kind of humor. I grew up watching old Abbott and Costello.
Yes. Yeah. But
comedy team. So this is my kind of humor. But yeah, it's
it goes
really
on for,
random.
But it goes on for a little too long. And that's another one where they cut it. They actually put a massive cut. And you're like, whoa, wait. Phil Silvers is now back out here and holding this guy's hand? What's going on?
It's really bizarre. And I love the very end, the curtain, how they close the curtain and then immediately open it back up. And he's got the dog and the woman's holding the guy's hand that won't let go. I love that. That's my kind of humor.
I wish, though, that we didn't have those cuts, first of all, because there's just a lot of things that you're like, I would love to see the dance that happens in this or like, you know, finish the song.
It's really bizarre. The cuts make. Yeah, you're like, whoa, did I hit the remote or something? What just happened? Yeah,
because the first time I thought it was because they didn't want to like keep closing the curtains to show a scene change or something. That was the very first one. And then after that, it was just random times. And I understand that they filmed it in 3D, but then when United Artists bought it, they only released the compressed version or whatever it's called, where it's not
flat
in 3D.
Version.
The flat version. So then it's like, why did you cut? Unless are these the moments where they're like reaching out to bitch slap the audience? Like if it was 3D, you know?
Yeah, I think, they only, there's one point where he throws a book and makes it 3D, but I think they just, they put so little time and money into this. I think they just wanted to make it shorter and zippier, and they didn't care.
But like, I don't think it helped. It didn't make it zippier to make these cuts.
I mean, it made it shorter. That's
It
all
made it
they cared
shorter,
about.
yes, but it actually hurt, I feel like, to do these edits than to, like, just show the whole thing. It's 1 hour and 40 minutes. That's still a blip compared to other things that are about to come or came before this,
Yeah,
right?
it's yeah, I
When
agree.
was
It's
Gone
really
with the
bizarre.
Wind? Gone with the Wind was before this, correct?
Yes.
So yeah, that's 3 hours long. This would be 1 hour and 40 minutes. That's half the movie. That's the first act of Gone with the Wind.
It's true. Yeah, they filmed Top Banana in a day and a half. I mean, they set up, it's the original, all the original sets and costumes.
Yeah. And they like just had the camera
Yeah,
to
and they just did
go.
the show.
I mean,
They just.
and that kind of, I guess that is the prototype for what would later become Pro Shots, because that then it's like, okay, you're just going to do the show and we're going to film it, and but it'll take 3, 5 days, 6 days, or however long to actually film it. Because then they want to get the specialty shots and play with camera and everything. I mean, I didn't hate that concept. I was like, give me more of this. I want to see
Yeah.
more theater things, I
Especially
want
for
to
a
see the
show that
curtains.
never, without a movie version, I mean, it barely has a lasting memory as is with the movie version, but without it, this would have been an also ran for sure. So
Yeah,
seeing a show like that.
because the stage version lasted just
A
under a
year.
year.
Yeah. And then they took it on the road, which was, I mean, fairly common. I mean, that.
Right, it seems, and when they went on the road, it was the same cast. It was like Phil Silvers and
Everybody, Rosemary, and the
Judy
only one I
Lynn.
think who was, I think the guy who played the singer, was, he didn't open the show, but he was the final, whatever that guy's name, the singer in the show, and then
Cliff,
went on the road with it, Cliff, yeah. So
the
yeah, the whole cast.
yeah, because Lindy Doherty is credited on the Wikipedia page for the musical, the stage version, and then Danny Shoal, I
Yeah,
believe that's
he
how you
was a
pronounce his last
replacement,
name.
Danny Scholl, in the original
He was
run.
great.
His song is actually one of my favorites. You're so beautiful, and I love that song. That's a bop in
Okay,
my book.
that one though, I don't understand why he's singing it. I may have like,
Because it's a nice song.
no, but I mean, like, why isn't Phil Silvers the one singing this to his girlfriend on
Because
the
Phil
phone?
Silvers can't sing. See, it doesn't matter the plot. The plot doesn't matter. Phil Silvers can't sing, so they just needed a nice male singer to sing a nice song. And so they just said, here's singing to the. Yeah, that's it.
Because a lot of my questions then, I guess, are like are going to be like, the plot doesn't matter.
Yeah, unfortunately, I mean that
Because really,
was the case.
the plot is, what is the plot?
Yeah, man on TV show needs to appease sponsors. That's it.
Oh my God. I mean, yeah. And then there's that whole like musical theater trope of the lovers meeting and it's instant, like in a day, in the same day,
They get married, yeah,
they get married
immediately, and
and then create the first reality show as well.
that Mr. and Mrs. Blendo, I'd watch it. The Real Housewives of Blendo.
So, have you seen the stage version of this? Has it been
No one has seen
revived?
the stage version of this. No, not to my knowledge, has never been
Would it
touched upon.
work? To your knowledge of like what's like, obviously, they probably need to update some things.
Yeah, but I mean, if you had someone with the charisma of Phil Silvers is so brilliant in this show, and in especially in Sergeant Bilko, the Phil Silvers show, of being a smarmy heel jerk, but just so lovable that you sort of root for him all these get rich quick schemes, and but he does always get his comeuppance in some way, you know.
Right, because in this one, the his girlfriend, quote unquote, marries somebody else. That's the comeuppance
With his blessing. Yeah.
I mean, I gotta say though, that was funny that he wears these like big, thick glasses throughout, and at the when Cliff and what's her name, Sally?
Sally.
When Cliff and Sally get
that's
married.
From Cabaret. I just
oh my
realized
God, it
that
is.
Right now. Cliff and Sally. Anyway, sorry, go on.
Cliff and Sally get married. He's blind, so he doesn't see that it's Sally, and she doesn't say a word. Like that kind of, I get that kind of humor because that is like vaudeville in a way.
Yeah, this is really burlesque comedy, sort of that, you know.
Big, playing to the back.
Yeah, very heavy-handed, you know, sort of base humor. But this is, I feel like burlesque is also the precursor to like dad jokes in a lot of ways. Very.
Yes. Like all the puns that are in the song Top Banana, so good.
Oh, I mean, you know, and he's like, yeah, I'm gonna take my case to court. He's got a case of beer, and then he takes a ladder. He's like, I'm gonna take it to a
higher court.
And then, you know, he comes with a hanger. He's like, I lost my suit, you know. So it's just, you know, bits. And
I mean, that song to me, to bring it up again to Kiss Me Kate, felt like Brush Up Your Shakespeare, where because they were playing in front of the curtain, I was like, there's something going on behind. Like, there's a scene change. There's something. And I feel like Brush Up Your Shakespeare, at least in the stage version, is that. It's to distract the audience, to be like, you don't see anything happening. But still,
well, I think it's just exits. It's just, you know, it leaves the show. It transcends the show itself to be more dramatic about it.
Because then in that one, it's like they're all performers. Okay, I'm going with it. You know, like, again, I didn't know what Pinky was, what his job was. I like that the barber is funny, but they're like, don't tell jokes because you're a barber.
Yeah, that actually, the barber, I forget his name, but he was a comedian back in the day. And Phil Silvers used to be his second banana for a while, and that's how, so it's kind of, and then it sort of switched. Anyway, it's just sort of fun.
Was it Bradford Hatton? Is that him?
That doesn't sound familiar.
Sorry, that's the actor's name. Mr. Parker? No.
No,
Mo.
The barber.
Herbie Fay played him.
Yeah, Herbie Fay. Yeah,
yes.
He was on the Phil Silver show too.
Yeah, he was.
I love that show.
For 139 episodes. And the new Phil Silver show. Oh my God.
He was all over Phil Silver's.
Hey, when you got a good buddy who like you got great timing and chemistry with, bring them along, right?
Hey, absolutely.
So then, okay. I was gonna ask you then, well, you don't know the show as well as like other shows, obviously. So there's like a few songs that were cut. And I get, and like we said, some of them are Rosemary's songs, but like, do you know them well? Like, is there one that you're like, I wish I saw this in this movie?
I mean, I've listened to the cast recording one or two times, but nothing, just You're So Beautiful and Top Banana are really the only two songs that I revisit on a frequent
on
basis.
A regular.
Actually, the show was based on Milton Berle, or at least inspired by Milton Berle, and Milton Berle performed Top Banana, the song, on The Muppet Show. So there you go.
I love
I
that.
I think that was the last time in the 70s that this show had any kind of exposure, was Milton Berle and the Muppets.
Well, until now.
It's him and Fozzie, I think, seeing Top Banana. Which,
yes,
I mean,
I did read that. And I was like, that is perfect for Fozzie because he's the comedian.
Waka Waka. That was my first ever VHS I was given, was, hey, you're as funny as Fozzie Bear, and as Fozzie Bear had teaching you how to tell jokes. So that led me on the direct path that I'm on now. Waka waka.
Oh my goodness. I mean, I did like the songs. They were nice. I just, again, there was like the Sansuki or Sushi,
Oh
that
yeah.
one big dance number. Like that was another one that's a victim
Like
of
you
the
kept
edits.
that one and you cut the other ones. But yeah, Johnny Mercer. I mean, Johnny Mercer is an amazing
Yeah.
songwriter.
And
So
that, and then like, so there's a song called Be My Guest that every time I saw the title, I went to Beauty and the Beast.
yes,
And that one is like, this is weird because it is, I'm gonna just say it is the first pro shot. I know it's not technically, but it kind of is. So there's the moment in Be My Guest where there's the ensemble who are on stage, and like,
Really randomly.
yeah, and I was just like, is this supposed to be like, there's some things that I think they needed to define better as a theatrical device versus a cinematic device. So
Well, it's
like,
also clunky, you know. Those people would have been offstage singers nowadays. Nowadays we have lots of offstage singers.
or at least they would be doing action elsewhere and then maybe like snap their heads towards the audience to break the fourth wall.
But no, it's just why are they there? It's because they needed backup singers for their song. That's why they're there.
It was all recorded live, right? Like there was no, they weren't pre, they didn't like go into a studio to record the singing.
Probably not. I mean, I don't know for sure, but no, I'm sure it was all done live.
It sounds it, and like there's a moment where you can even hear the orchestra like sound be fuzzy and weird.
Yeah, Phil Silvers,
Hated this. He hated the
well, he
movie.
talked about it and he was like, how the sound of, we lose lines, yet they pick up every squeak from every shoe backstage somehow. So yeah, it was just a scrappy last minute pro shot before they knew how to do that.
So he, to quote him from Wikipedia, he says, with its out of sync sound, inexplicable noises, scenes that seem to be underwater, it's now avant-garde. It's like, yeah, I mean, yeah, I feel like this is something to be watched, but like, I kind of want to, I now want to see the stage version.
Right? I would love to be in a production of Top Banana.
Ooh,
That's
okay. Who would you play? I kind of want to give you like either Jerry or Pinky.
I think I would like to be Jerry or the writer.
Okay. He's got some good one-liners.
I'm too big to be Pinky. You can't have a second banana that's bigger than the Top Banana.
You
These are
never
just the
know.
comedy rules.
Okay. I'm sorry, I don't know the comedy rules. I didn't have the Fozzie Bear tape.
Pinky, whose name is Joey Fay, he was a very famous burlesque comic as well. He invented, if you're a Lucy fan, you'll know that the routine, it's a famous routine, Slowly I Turned.
That's him.
He That's not him in the Lucy show, but he
That being like that,
created
yeah.
that routine. Yeah, at least
Slowly I turn,
he
step
claims
by.
there's no way to prove it, but he claims he invented
Like
that
how the
routine.
Brothers Grimm created those fairy tales.
Exactly,
There's no
exactly.
way to actually claim that, but like they're the ones that wrote it down. So it's, I
There you
guess
go. Yeah.
that's it. Yeah, I feel like if they wanted to redo this, I think. Would Nathan Lane work as a Jerry?
I don't know. You 'cause
Because the thing is, Jerry, like you said, is written as a not a singer. But if you want to like give him, because he does sing at points, not
Yeah, I mean,
great.
Phil Silvers did plenty of musicals in his time, but yeah, I wouldn't pop on the, Phil Silvers sings the classics record anytime soon.
What? Right
That,
after you play the William Shatner records, right?
of course, I'm a rock get
Got
man.
mad. But I feel like there's some of the jokes that should be taken out, like a lot of the sexual harassment-y jokes that he has.
Yeah. I mean,
Although,
just par for the course, yeah.
I did laugh at the gay joke.
What was the gay joke?
There was something with Anne Marie and Phil Silvers and somebody else. I can't remember who the third person was, but they're talking about being a straight man. And she's like, well, I like straight men or something like that. Or there was
she's like, ah, I'm a woman.
I'm a woman. And I was like, that was a gay joke. They wrote in a gay joke. Keep it. Keep it. Because that one was a little more coded than him pinching one of the models and being like, yeah, I'll take her, you know?
Yeah, very much that.
He had a line that I almost threw up where he wrote, he says, a guy like me has to be seen with a pretty girl, whether I like it or not. I was like,
whether I like it or not. And I happen to like it. But that's not the punchline. The punchline is, and I happen to like it.
And I happen to like, but like, still that line itself, I'm like, are you saying that you're, I mean, you're not a 10, let's be real here.
That's what makes him Jerry Biffle, is the ego, the huge ego in this tiny rat of a man. It's, I mean, I don't know. It just.
So is this like, would you say Jerry Biffle started the trope of this kind of character? You know, like, he's so important and busy that he has to like get a massage, get a shave, have somebody dance for him, like that whole opening of his character.
I mean, I think it was based more on, I mean, you know, real larger than life comedians. I mean, besides Milton Berle, there was Jack Benny and Phil Silvers, you know, to, I guess that's more of art imitating life or life imitating art. He sort of became that persona of.
But I feel like this is probably one of the earlier versions of seeing this as a character, not as a real life person, but like, you know, what would later become. I can't think of anybody else off the top of my head that could fit this type where they're so busy that they need to like have everybody and everything come to them and it's all at once.
Yeah, the egomaniac.
Yeah. Honestly, somebody, Encores, please do this. Figure it out.
I would love to. I mean, like, there's people who could do it, like, at Encores. I don't know that, you know, somebody like, I was going to say Christian Borle, but maybe not Christian Borle.
I think he's also a little, Christian Borle could probably play, like, one of, like, the writer.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, sorry, that's your role. Excuse me.
The show, like, Little Me. There's a show called Little Me that also like features a big comedian at the center. So like trying to think of people who played the lead in Little Me, like Martin Short, I think.
I would love that.
Although, yeah, maybe like Martin Short as Jiminy Glick as Jerry Biffle.
Yes, would be we got there. Because Jiminy Glick doesn't sing at all.
Yeah.
So Martin Short doesn't have to sing or sing well. Go. And then he can be the snippy Jiminy Glick character that'll fit in with Jerry Biffle.
There you go.
We Jiminy did it. Biffle. We did it. Encores, I know you're listening to us, so give us a producer credit, please. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Producer credits. We'll take our paycheck.
We'll take that. Front row opening night seat. Thank you.
There was a moment, too, where I can't remember when it was, but Phil Silvers just reminded me of Elliot Gould in the Oceans trilogy.
Yeah, totally. There's, totally,
I think this was, he was wearing a robe at one point. Yeah, That's when it was, because I was just like, oh, if he had like a cigar and a glass, like a whiskey or something, bourbon, whatever Elliot Gould's character was drinking in those movies, like he would be fit right in.
very much that.
I also really I like the whole department scene as well, department store scene.
Yeah, with the excuse to just walk in on the girls in their underwear.
But like the whole, because that was the thing about this is that scenes were long, but they weren't too long. I feel like, I mean, I was
lots of
like
scenelets in.
Yeah, I was also thinking of it as like I'm an audience member watching the show, so like scenes go on for a while, but that's because you know you have to get your exposition, you got to get your conflict, you got to get some
Hey, can't
build on
change the set
something.
too many times.
Especially in these like this style of show.
Right.
I'm also thinking of like I keep going back to Kiss Me, Kate.
It's you know, sort of, you know, somewhat similar in just, you know, the television world versus the theater world.
Right. And then you've got the backstage, the dressing room, and then the other scene, the other set piece is the external of the building, really. Which the latter moment was funny, but still the hand holding was just a little too long. I did like the physicality of it though. It was
Oh my
very
God, the choreography that went into that and the fast pace moving around. I mean,
that little
you
guy
reminded me of Eagle Eye
flips.
Flegel from Lil Abner.
That guy flips around and you know because they treated it as if it was a stage show, you see his costume, like his shirt gets untucked and his buttons get undone and everything, and he's a mess and he's got to fix it on stage, you
And
know.
yeah, and he's the one, the Evil Eye Flegel guy is the one who takes his glasses. I mean, just it's all hysterical.
It's yeah, although that character is that another one where you were saying like shows like this that had the running gag? Like, I know he comes later and Jerry has a moment of like, fuck no.
I think it's just
But was he established
random.
earlier? I don't remember.
I don't think so. I think it was just a bit that comes out of nowhere. I mean, I feel like Gen Z would respond to it. I feel like senses of humor sort of evolve in this circular motion. And our generation was very scripted, and our comedy was character based, but also like shock value. That's why we had things like South Park, and we would tell horrible jokes that's getting everyone in trouble on Twitter now from 10 years ago, because the
Right.
joke was to be as horrible as you can. That was our sort of sense of humor. And then later generation with like the SpongeBob generation and things out of nowhere were funny. So I feel like that's part of that trope of just
But also,
absurdity.
I'm clumping us together, and I, yeah, because we're close in age. We're the generation that not only had South Park, but we grew up with Nick at Night. So we had the I Love Lucy's, we had the Phil
Yeah.
Silvers shows, we had all this other thing. So we got like the good dichotomy of it where we got the wholesome but vaudeville burlesque-y
Yeah.
comedy and then the
But also
crass
getting into
humor.
Seinfeld with being horrible and, you know, and sort
About
of the
nothing.
gross out humor of there's something about Mary and all
And
those
a lot
anyway.
of Nickelodeon shows from when in the 90s
Yeah,
was
Ren and
gross. Ren and
Stimpy? What the
Stimpy,
hell?
Rocko's Modern Life. So
Yeah.
I don't even know how we got on this.
Comedy.
Comedy. Would you show this movie to your kids? Granted, you have to be like, hey kids, the editing is weird, but let's watch a movie.
But I mean, maybe not now when they're older, sure.
Just
I think if you can appreciate this style of comedy, I think anyone interested in musical theater, I think it's a fascinating document of a show and a time and a style and basically a pro shot, like we've been saying, that's such a gift. And if you also enjoy that old style of comedy, then it's you can really enjoy it. But
yeah.
it's really just a fascinating time capsule in a lot of ways.
I don't. Is there anything else you want to talk about before we get into Sharp and Flat?
Oh, who was in the ensemble? There was somebody in the ensemble I was reading, and I was like, "Oh, that's really cool."
Some.
She played like somebody.
Well, I mean,
Oh,
this was
from
also a
Star
huge
Trek.
cat.
She played Janice Rand on Star Trek, and like all in all the films, she was in the ensemble. She was Miss Holland. So if anyone's a big Star Trek fan, there you go.
Grace Lee Whitney.
Yes.
This was also, it was a huge cast. Like, I noted that when they did the bows at the end. I also appreciated the bows. And like, it's interesting though that like they didn't actually bow. It was, but they did a curtain call.
Yeah, well, because there was no audience, so I'm sure they all felt like idiots.
Well, and that, okay. When they show the audience though, that was weird, because I wasn't sure if that was supposed to be the theater audience or like the Jerry Biffle show audience.
Yeah, because they're supposed to be in rehearsal. Yeah, you see the audience, and then they say it's 4 o'clock in the morning. Are we going to rehearse all night? And you're like, wait a minute, there's an audience watching. What the hell?
And they are
So the
dressed to the
original,
nines as
yeah.
well.
So they're supposed to be the audience watching the show. So the original concept for the movie was supposed to open with someone, it's supposed to be a perspective shot of someone getting out of a cab, going up to the box office, buying a ticket, going to see an
Yes.
usher, taking their seat, and the show opening. That was how it was supposed to. So I think the audience shots were held over from that concept.
And I read that and I was like, I would have loved to see this, but they apparently couldn't figure out how to do it.
Yeah, see,
Granted,
that would have taken
technology of the
time and
time.
money, and they didn't want to do any of that.
Yeah. But also,
So
I feel like the technology of the time, they had to like actually work it out and figure it out. Now we have Steadicams that are attached to a person that you can easily do that.
yeah,
I mean,
very true.
SNL did it with that one recurring bit in the hotel room where it was the camera was somebody. Oh, I'm forgetting the name of it.
Is this recent?
No, this was like in the 90s, early 2000s, where they would have like somebody's hand come out from the camera to be that woman.
Yeah. I get what you're saying.
But
Very much, yeah.
yes. Anyway, let's get to Sharp and Flat, shall we?
Let's do it.
Sharp Flat.
So in this segment, we're going to highlight some moments, whether or not we talked about it. If we liked it, it's sharp. And if we didn't like it or thought it could change, it's flat. What do you want to start with?
Start with sharps.
Okay. I sharp the concept. I love it. I think it helped pave the way for what would later become Pro Shots, because then we wouldn't have Pippin, we wouldn't have Into the Woods, we wouldn't have Hamilton, we wouldn't have all these other great shows immortalized on film for audiences. I also sharped the puns in the titular song, because I love puns. Or they're like on the verge of dad jokes, and I love dad jokes as
Yep.
well.
Full of that.
I also sharped Sally's blue printed dress that she wears. It's the second dress that she's modeling in the department store. Do they ever? They never say
I'll
the
have
name
to
of
go
it, do
back
they?
and look. Department, no.
No, it's the one where she meets up with Jerry, but before she becomes Miss whatever they call it, Miss Blendo.
Well, when she first meets the singer, right? And he's like,
Cliff,
"I
yes.
sang to you,"
It's
and they
really
fall in love.
it's a really nice dress. I like the design of it personally. What's fascinating too about this is that they're wearing costumes, but they don't look like costumes. Like to bring up Lil Abner again, they're wearing costumes, and they were the costumes from the stage version, if I remember correctly.
They weren't literally taken from the theater, but they're reproductions of,
Recreations. Yeah.
yes.
So, but this one, because it's such a naturalistic, but like also we're in a department store, so I guess they're going a little more high fashion, but it felt still very grounded and real. And I
Yeah.
thoroughly enjoyed that.
Plus you get the sort of during the Top Banana song, you get a lot of fun clown and burlesque style.
Yes.
Oh God, when he's singing that song and he hits the little fan on the girl's tit. That just cracks me up.
I think that was the Top Banana Ballet. I couldn't find any other titles in all the other sources, but I feel like this is his version of a Gene Kelly Dream Ballet.
Very much.
And yeah. I was here for it, but also I'm like, what's the name of all these songs?
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. It
doesn't matter.
And I want to give a sharp to Johnny Coy, who played Tommy the dancer. Unbelievable dancing from that man. And apparently this is the last film that he made on his IMDb credit. I feel like he was a stage person though. So that makes sense.
Yeah.
What about you? What were your sharps?
I'll always sharp You're So Beautiful, because I love that song. And just the absurdity of them feeding him lines and him singing on the phone. I don't know.
I like how you said it. For the listening audience, he made like a very coy gesture. Like, you're so beautiful. I'm going to shrug my shoulder in front. Because I'm so beautiful.
Lana Turner turns green.
I mean, that was a great song. And I like that it felt improvised. I know it's not, but it felt.
Yeah. And that's the whole thing of musical theater. How do you put a love song in early into a show without introducing a love plot? That's always like the catch of,
oh my
and that's
God,
why
you're right.
Rodgers and Hammerstein were the king of that, with like, If I Loved You, and people will say we're in love. That's how you get, they call them conditional love songs. That's how you get a love song without a love plot yet.
We got a new term, everybody. Conditional love songs.
Is that what it is?
Well, we'll go with
it. I can't
it.
Remember. Yeah, but it's how do you get a love song in early? And so that's the you know, sing to my girl, and we'll give you the lines. It's a great device for that.
Any other sharps?
I'm gonna sharp the hand holding guy, just despite you, because
I honestly feel like
the physicality of it is just so funny. Just to see his arm, like Muppet, you know, like Kermit the Frogging.
I agree with the physicality. It was pretty funny. It just felt like, as a movie watcher, a movie audience member, it felt a little long, but I feel like if we're in the theater,
the audience roar louder and louder as it went on, it would have.
Yeah. It's like in shows when there's an improvised moment, you know, where it's clearly improvised. Yes, they may be doing the same thing, just like a little tweaks here and there. The one that comes to mind is in Popular in Wicked, when they do the toss toss.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen a compilation.
There's
compilations.
License. Yeah, the actors can take a bit of license with.
Right. So that
they
moment
can
go.
The audience and.
However long it needs to go, depending on your Glinda and her presence with everything. And I feel like that is the same thing, where I needed to see it in person in order to be like, I like this. This is funny. But like, also, I commend that person for his physicality flipping. And when they twist around in like holding all three hands and everything, all sets of hands and everything.
Oh my God. And it's just in you see bits like that. Like, I think, again, I Love Lucy, when they're handcuffed together, there's that same sort of twisting and turning. I was thinking like how there's certain bits in this show that are classic bits. And it's like, I called it a joke box musical instead of a jukebox musical. It's like classic jokes reused for the show. It's a joke box musical.
That's the quote. That's the quote. It's a joke box musical. Future me, when you're editing this, remember that. Write it down.
Trademarked.
Any other sharps?
No, I think no.
Okay. Flats.
The cuts.
Yeah, the weird cuts and edits. And then Jerry Biffle snapping. just the snapping was what got me. Was I really just wanted to like hit him.
The snapping and the whistle were direct cuts at Milton Berle.
I imagine that. But like the fact that he's snapping at people to get their attention, that's that I don't like. And I don't care who you are, I don't like it.
Milton Berle said that this was the best attack at him, and he thought about suing the author, but that would only raise more interest in the show, but he didn't mind since he invested in it.
So he won in the end?
Yeah, so that's the kind of Jerry Biffle comedy. He's attacked, but yet he's making money off of it because he invested in the show, you know?
Of course, and it was his idea. Only his idea.
Of course.
Would you add any of the songs to your life's playlist?
Top Banana and You're So Beautiful.
See, I think I
had to do the move again.
Yeah, you did the move. I didn't initially write anything down, but I think I would agree with you with You're So Beautiful. Top Banana for me I need the visual. Cause
that's true. It's a bit of like Comedy Tonight. You really want that.
Yeah. You need to see the ladder. You need to see the case. You need to see all the other props.
Prop comedy is one of my favorite forms of comedy.
And this is all prop comedy.
I mean, that was burlesque. That was there's shows like Hell's a Poppin' and different shows, but it was all big.
I think they missed out on a great moment, but I don't know if they could have fit it in with the ladder at the end. Mm-hmm. If he turned and hit somebody, like but who would he hit? You know, like that's the question.
That's true.
So when encore is when you do this,
figure out a way
to get that sort of slapstick
hit with the ladder.
Yes. Safely or unsafely. Who knows?
You know, hey, it's all for comedy.
But on that note, wow, we did this pretty fast, just like the edits.
Brian, I think for your listeners to get the full experience of this film, you should just cut random sections of this podcast just randomly out. So it doesn't make any sense. We just jump to a different section.
I mean, naturally, we did that with the conversation. No, I mean, like with me, I jumped around being like, let's talk about the songs. Let's talk about this. Let's go back to the songs. Let's talk about
comedy. That always happens when I'm a guest. I like to jump around.
Hey, keep things not linear. But actually, so you would say you would do the either Jerry or the writer. Do you want this to be revived? Even if you're not in it.
I mean, yes, I would. I want every show revived so I could see it live.
True.
Do I think that this...
Does it deserve a second chance?
I think there's better vehicles for a comedian nowadays.
Okay.
I think this could be revised heavily, maybe, and put up again, but
I wish they found the prints for those moments that were cut, because
I know, and it's the only 3D movie in existence where the 3D print was lost,
because they sent out the flat prints only.
Yep, they filmed it in 3D, but then they didn't distribute it. There was an advertisement. Somebody found an ad, because there was sort of like a little resurgence of 3D interest. So there was an ad saying that they were going to show the 3D version later. But then that's the only evidence. There's no evidence beyond that it was actually ever shown in 3D.
Right, because this was filmed as the 3D craze was dying.
Literally was dying as they were filming it.
Yeah, so they're like, oh, I guess we're gonna do the flat print. But on that note, we're now really done with the episode. What do you have to plug or promote?
If you go to my YouTube channel, Broadway by Ghostlight, every Thursday at 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, I do Broadway Jeopardy. I do
Ooh.
26 all new clues, 5 all new categories. You can come and test your musical theater knowledge. I've got special guests coming up in episodes, future episodes, and we have a lot of fun.
Are you gonna? You should fit in Top Banana somehow.
That will be my next. I'll have a whole category for Top Banana. And everyone will, all the comments will be like, I don't know anything about this show. How dare you?
You're like, know your musical theater history. What can I tell you?
Yeah, I said, well, I got a podcast you can listen to, so.
Do a cross plug where you're like, here's a Top Banana, The Cradle of Rock, Kiss Me Kay, Little Abner,
There you go.
and then Miscellaneous.
Exactly. Everyone, this would be my least watched episode ever.
And people be like, I don't understand what is happening. And you go, blame John.
I know people, I love my viewers, I love everybody, but either I always get complaints that either they're too hard or too easy. Can't please everybody.
And then are you going back to talk, like delving into the history of some shows
Yeah,
again?
I still want to do that. When I sort of stumbled upon the idea of Broadway Jeopardy, it's a lot faster to produce than my
True.
big long documentaries, so I can do those weekly. And sort of the goal is to get some episodes in the can that I can then go back and have time to focus on the other bigger ones. But right now I'm just cranking out the Broadway Jeopardy episodes.
Okay. Hey, if
We're
you
on
need a
episode
guest.
this Thursday is episode 12.
Oh, well, this is going to be out for a while, so
We're on probably episode
20 something.
17 now. So yeah, no. So check out Broadway Jeopardy. Well, I might have guest. You can write a whole category and present it on my so.
I'm ready if you need a Vanna or
I
No,
know
there's no Vanna
I
White,
should
but
do a
you know.
live show with actual people on it at some point.
Oh my God, yes. I will drop everything to do it if you need somebody. I'm bad at test taking and knowledge questions, but hey, we'll figure it out.
It'll be only Lil Abner and Cats Don't Dance.
Oh God, okay.
So study up.
Gene Kelly.
Michael
Oh.
Jackson.
Oh, do you have something from this show, by the way, or did you try to get something from Top Banana as a like a prop or a costume piece?
I
Speaking
don't
of
think
Lil Abner.
anything exists. Actually, I was watching it again when I was watching it for this, and I was like, ooh, I wonder what happened to that. Like the Jerry Biffles like cardboard stand-in from the very opening. I was like,
That
what
was
happened to
funny.
this?
That was funny.
I love that. I wish I would take something from Top Banana any day.
Well,
I have a Top Banana award, but it has nothing to do with the show.
no. Well, if you listener have something from Top Banana that you're willing to sell to Mark, and you need a liaison, you can email me at buttersongpod@gmail.com. Also on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, and Threads at buttersongpod. Have you seen a production of this? Because it's always interesting where there's some shows that like went on Broadway and then just died, but somehow some like regional or community theater revived it. And you know, I feel like this is probably one of those kind of shows
I would
that,
love to. I've never heard of any other productions of Top Banana ever.
well, we'll see if
I'm
somebody has done
super,
it.
super interested.
And if you want to be part of the next episode's conversation, well, we're going to be talking about something very different. We'll be discussing
Ooh.
the Star Trek Strange New Worlds episode, Subspace Rhapsody.
Is that a musical episode of Star
It
Trek?
was a musical episode of Star Trek.
Wow.
The newer one where it's like an alt reality.
I've never seen a single episode of Star Trek.
I could say the same thing.
I've seen Khan the musical, a musical version of The Wrath of Khan. That's it. It was really good.
Did the William Shatner character sing like this?
Oh yes, it was. I mean,
Kirk.
it was hysterical. Khan. It's yeah, Khan the musical.
Khan! Well, Mark, I didn't hate this one. Well, I hated it for mutual reasons. For
yes, yes,
the reason.
I think even the great Jerry Biffle would agree with those.
Phil Silvers hated it too. So,
you know, there's a Phil Silvers museum in the UK.
Really?
I would love to go
He's
there.
Not British, is he?
No, it's just a super fan. I think they used to have a Twitter handle. I wonder if they're still there. Anyway, I'm gonna go.
We're gonna go. Some good.
My life.
Do it. And thank you.
Maybe
everyone.
They have the Jerry Biffle cardboard cutout
that you can totally not steal.
Ocean's 15. It's just me stealing things from the Bill Silver's museum.
And then 14 other people are elsewhere in the building. Well, everyone, thank you for listening and bye for now.
Bye.
Special thanks to Aaron Troy for creating the pod's artwork and to Nick Bombacino for composing the theme song and the jingles. A huge thank you to CastBox for hosting this podcast. And thank you again for tuning in to today's episode of Life's But a Song. Bye for now, everyone, and have a musical day.